Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Expert from Sheffield, England, Rob Staton of Seahawks Draft Blog and the 3000 NFL Mock Draft Podcast. Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I think the last time, Rob, anybody correctly guessed who the Seahawks were going to take with their first pick in any draft was back when they took Russell Okung back in 2010. And it was an obvious need with a player with clear talent where the Seahawks had a need. But it's a lot more challenging when the Seahawks are at the bottom of the first round or having to wait until the second round like these past few years. Yet, Rob, this year you came up with a formula. You knew what the Seahawks needed in either offense or defensive line, and you nailed the pick. The Seahawks take Jermaine Ifedi, the tackle from Texas A&M. How did it feel to see that pick come in?
Well, you know, if more than anything, it felt good because I think that Jermaine Ifedi is going to be a really good player for the Seahawks because it's very rare that late in the first round you find a guy with his level of athleticism, his length, his size at the end of the first round. You know, generally these types of players go very early. I think that he gets a bit of a bad rap. I think a lot of the media were very critical of Jermaine Ifedi and the way that he performed. Yet when you watch him play against teams like Alabama last season, I thought he played pretty well. So I think it was pretty rare for the Seahawks to find somebody like him late in the first round. I think they've got a really good pick there. And yeah, he does sort of fit the formula. You know, they like length, they like explosive offensive linemen, and he ticks a lot of those boxes. He's going to start at right guard, it looks like, initially. But it wouldn't be a big surprise if eventually he moved over to right tackle, maybe even left tackle for the Seahawks, because he has pretty much everything that you look for in an NFL tackle.
Well, you talk about the media that were critical of the pick. The one that stands out in my mind, Pro Football Focus, said that they had him projected or a sixth round talent in their eyes. What did you think of that one? when they had Jermaine Ifedi as the worst pick of the first round of the NFL draft?
Yeah, I'd love to see the 200 prospects they rank ahead of Jermaine Ifedi if he's a sixth round prospect. I mean, this is the thing with Pro Football Focus is that there is a use for stuff like this. But when they start saying things like Jermaine Ifedi is a sixth round prospect, you kind of have to say you're going too far. And you look at some of the ways that they grade. Essentially, it's just a guy watching tape and he grades how he thinks a particular prospect has done. And PFF, they don't know what the guy's role is necessarily. I thought there was some great stuff from, I think it was it Jeff Schwartz, actually, the former New York Giants lineman, who was saying, like, you know, you've sort of diagnosed that this is what is supposed to happen on this play. And he was sort of tweeting, this was my job here, or this was this guy's job here, and you've kind of got that wrong. And when you sort of see PFF, they graded a 5-touchdown performance by Aaron Rodgers against Kansas City last year as a negative performance. I think Earl Thomas was the 29th ranked safety in 2012. There's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, the Seahawks, I think, in a game, I'm trying to remember which game it was last year, maybe something like the Cleveland game or something like that, when they ran all over. Oh, no, it was the Arizona game. It was the Arizona game in week 16 where they ran all over the Cardinals and won the game at a canter. And the Seahawks got a negative grade for run blocking and the Arizona Cardinals defense got a plus grade. And you're thinking, well, you know, it was a totally one-sided performance. So while, you know, Pro Football Focus has definitely got a use and it's interesting and some of their stuff is very interesting to read, particularly on pass rushes, I think, because we tend to judge pass rushes on sacks. Mm-hmm. And some of their studies on, you know, impact and splash plays is pretty interesting. But in terms of Jermaine Ifedi being a sixth-round prospect, I think I'll sort of just walk past that one and ignore it.
sounds like a plan. Now, one guy we kind of ignored, Rob, is Jaron Reed. And I think part of the reason for that is we didn't think he'd be available at the bottom of the first round, yet the Seahawks get him toward the middle of the second round. They trade up to get him at pick number 49. How did you feel about that pick?
I think it's a fantastic pick. Did not expect him at all to be available that late. Clearly the Seahawks didn't either. I remember seeing the body language of John Schneider as they had made the trade and did the pick, and he kind of shrugged his shoulders in utter disbelief, really, that they'd been able to pull it off. I had him at number 16 to Detroit in the first round. I think a lot of people have said, you know, people like Mike Mayock and Daniel Jeremiah were ranking this guy in the top 20. Mm-hmm. And if you were to just grade him on what he does, he is a top 20 type talent. I mean, he does not, if you want a run defender, this is the guy you need. I mean, he doesn't move off the line of scrimmage. You know, he would take on a double team, plant his legs like a tree, and just, you could not move him off the line of scrimmage. And because the Seahawks play so much on gap discipline, gap control, doing your job, run defense in base defense, you know, this type of player is like gold dust for them. I bet they were very, very tempted to take Jaron Reed in the first round, and probably would have done at a pinch if it wasn't for the fact that they desperately needed some offensive line help. So to get him at number 49, and all they had to do was give up a fourth round pick to trade up for him, is terrific. And I think that watching him play, he definitely has an element of explosion to him. And I think there's a bit more sort of pass rushing ability in there than we saw necessarily at Alabama, where he only played something like 60% of the snaps, I think. So they kept him fresh. They kept him on rundowns. I think if the Seahawks use him that way, I think they'll mix him up a little bit. They'll play him at the one, the three, and the five. And they'll get him sort of moving across the line, attacking at different angles. And I think that he's actually going to be a better pass rusher than people think. Still pretty much going to be a base defender, but I think this is tremendous value. And he could end up being a core player for the Seahawks over the next few years.
And when people talk about that ability that he had at Alabama, it wasn't necessarily that he was asked to rush the passer, right? And that's kind of why people think that he has that upside as potentially as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing we've got to remember with Alabama is that they generally, like, you know, like USC did with Pete Carroll, is they just stash 5- and 4-star recruits. So if they have Jaron Reed and A'shaun Robinson in there working the run defense, they can look at people like Jonathan Allen and Tim Williams. I think Tim Williams played something like 30% of the snaps. He's going to be a potential top 10 pick next year, just a pure pass rusher. So they had a lot of guys. I mean, they've got guys coming through who we're going to sort of see in the next year for Alabama, who could easily go on and be first round picks, who are playing sort of like rotational backup roles. So you can afford to say to someone like Jaron Reed, just work on the run defense. That's all we want you to do. Beast out. Don't give up anything in the run game. And then we're going to pull you out and put Tim Williams on the field. I mean, he wasn't asked to do much pass rushing. So we'll see what he can do in camp. The Seahawks might be able to coax a little bit more out of him in terms of a pass rusher. And if that's the case, then, you know, in a few years' time, we could be looking at this pick as a huge steal. Remember that Kawan Short went at the sort of the top of the second round to Carolina and ended up being one of the best defensive tackles in the league. It won't be a huge shock if Jaron Reed has something similar there.
So we didn't talk much about Reed. Another guy, or a position really, that we didn't talk much about was tight end. And the Seahawks, thanks to that draft pick, moving down from Jermaine Ifedi, moving down from 26 to 31, they pick up the Broncos' third-round pick, and they take tight end Nick Vannette.
Yeah, and I didn't expect them to take a tight end, and that was a big mistake on my behalf. I mean, I generally thought that because they had Jimmy Graham, because they had Luke Wilson, and sort of the way that they seemed to have looked at sort of Cooper Helfert and sort of the way that they seem to have a lot of time for him, I thought they'd probably say, okay, we can stick with Helfert and Wilson for now, wait for Jimmy Graham to get healthy and then just roll with that. Plus, the other thing is that college tight ends are not very good these days. I mean, there's a reason why the Seahawks traded for Jimmy Graham, and that's right. because there aren't many Jimmy Grahams around. So I didn't expect them to go for something like this. I kind of wrongly ignored Nick Vinette and what he would bring to the table. I've had a chance to sort of go and have a look at him after the draft and watch two of his games. And in particular, if people want to sort of see what he's all about and the reason why the Seahawks have drafted him, I would recommend finding his tape, which is available online, against Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl, where he didn't do much route running, and I think his routes are kind of, they need development there. There's not a lot of snap in his short-range routes as well. So in terms of the passing game, he's got a lot of work to do there. I don't think he hits the seam as well as he can, doesn't create much separation against linebackers, but as a blocker, just fantastic. He didn't miss a single block in that game. I mean, he was being asked to line up 1v1 and maybe play as an extra tackle. He was being asked to sort of pull around and hit a target on the move. He was being asked to get to the second level and block linebackers, and he would identify his guy, latch on, and execute the block. It's a really difficult skill, and it's something you don't see a lot of in college. You just don't see players playing this way. The orthodox tight end has been sort of taken away from the college game as the spread offense has become more dominant, and I think it's great that Ohio State, they're very much a run team. If they're not getting the quarterback to run, they're getting Zeke Elliott to run. So they clearly felt there was some benefit in having a tight end like that. They used Nick Vinette almost predominantly as a blocker. I think that he's going to produce some instant impact there, especially when he lines up as that extra tackle and as an option to in the passing game to sort of be a deceptive weapon in that regard. I also think he's going to offer some, I don't think he's going to offer much in terms of third down conversion or a lot of the stuff that Graham and Wilson are good at. But I think in the red zone, because of his size, I think he's got the longest wingspan from a tight end to enter the league in several years. So wingspan and size and catch radius could be a big thing in the red zone.
Well, if there's one thing that the Seahawks made clear with the Vinette pick is that they are still going to be a running team. The other thing that made it clear, they took three running backs, Rob, and three running. If there's one area where I feel like people are being critical of the Seahawks draft, it's the fact that they took three running backs throughout the draft when it seemed like perhaps they had other needs at different positions. How did you feel when you saw three running backs come off the board, CJ Procise in the third, Alex Collins in the fifth, and then Zach Brooks in the seventh?
I was very comfortable with it because for one reason or another, I've spent a lot of time looking at the first two guys, and I had spent some time looking at Zach Brooks because he had a visit with the Seahawks, so he was linked to them a little bit, so there was a reason to go and look at him. On Procise, I mean, he's been compared to Matt Forte. I think he's a lot more fluid and a bit more natural as a runner than Matt Forte. Terrific hands. You know, he doesn't go out of bounds. He will drive through defenders. Very much a Seahawks type of running back in terms of size and fluidity. If he had to come in for Thomas Rawls and spell a little bit, then he could do that. But I think his great value is going to be that he is... He's kind of like the ideal third down, two-minute offense back. And the Seahawks have really developed a good two-minute offense over the years. I mean, if you remember, Robert Turbin used to do that role. Fred Jackson kind of did it last year. When they need to move the ball towards the end of a half, they've generally done it. I mean, they've actually had games where they've struggled on offense in the first half. And then when it gets to the two-minute drill and quicken things up, all of a sudden they start moving the ball and you kind of sort of take that into the second half and that momentum. So I think Procise is going to help them do that in a much better way than, you know, as good as Fred Jackson is as a player and was as a player. Procise is younger, fresher, more athletic. He's going to scare teams as well. I mean, he could take a little wheel route to the left and take it to the house for 60 yards. He could just sort of convert a third down running over across, running sort of in from the slot inside on a slant. He could do that and get a third down conversion. I think that you could also, the one other thing that the Seahawks love to do is they love the empty backfield look. And I know a lot of fans probably cringe at that. You know, it gets a lot of criticism from Seahawks fans, but it's a look the Seahawks love to have. So you put Procise in the backfield, the defense maybe is in a run formation, they're expecting a run, and then you just split him outside. You've got a mismatch there, because if the defense is lined up to defend the run and you've split the running back out wide, then although you're sort of showing your hand, this is going to be a pass, you're also saying we've got a matchup problem here. They can't cover this guy in the way that they want to, or they're going to cover him and they're going to leave someone like Jimmy Graham or Doug Baldwin open. So it provides a lot of options for the Seahawks to have an empty backfield look, and ProSize is going to help them to do that. Quickly on the other two, Alex Collins is a player I just love. I mean, he's not Marshawn Lynch, but his running style is very similar. Short steps, power, will drive people into the end zone. There's a great play, if you've not seen it yet, Seahawks fans, go and look at it. Kansas State towards the end of last season, where he just sort of broke about five tackles and carried a pile into the end zone. Very Marshawn Lynch-esque. He's going to be a fun player for the Seahawks fans to follow in training camp. And Brooks, a bit like Precise, they clearly just like the guy and didn't want him to get away in undrafted free agency. They took him in the seventh round. And he's going to add to the competition. The Seahawks are a running team. They've got a number of guys in there. Christian Michael's still there. Thomas Rawls is there. Why not have all these guys competing in training camp to see who's going to be one, two, and three?
Well, and I think that was part of the question, right, is that was this some kind of statement of how they feel about guys like Thomas Rawls and Christian Michael when you bring in three brand new guys to compete with two guys that you kind of expected to be there. But now Christian Michael has to be kind of worrying, I think, because clearly the team likes Thomas Rawls.
Yeah, Michael has to worry because he's the one who's under pressure here. Thomas Rawls is going to be the number one, health permitting, because he's warranted that. But the thing about Christian Michael is he performed better last year when the pressure was really on. You know, this is your last chance. Mm-hmm. And he looked good. But he needs that pressure again in training camp. He can't settle into a number two role here. They want people, you know, really knocking on his door and saying, I want your job. So I think that's a good thing. And look, either way, it's going to work for the Seahawks. Either Christian Michael's is going to win this job and he's going to be convincing and he's going to get that element of trust from the Seahawks coaches, or someone else is going to snatch that job away from him. And I think either way, the Seahawks are going to benefit.
So you mentioned that Seahawks fans generally don't like it when the Seahawks line up five wide. And I think part of the reason for that is that the linemen have trouble with the pass blocking part of that whole scenario. And people obviously know that the Seahawks are going to pass in that situation. But they went out and they got Jermaine Ifedi. They got Reese Odhiambo. Now, at number 97, Reese Odhiambo, not one of those guys, because of his injuries, he didn't have the numbers to plug into your trench explosion formula. Mm. But there were a lot of other guys at that number 97 pick where you look down that list and you see guys that have those that fit into that formula well, that would be Tom Cable, likely to be Tom Cable guys. What did you think of that particular pick?
I mean, it was not a total surprise, because Tony Pauline is a fantastic draft insider. Had speculated the Seahawks really liked the guy because of the injuries, and because Pete Carroll had said that they wanted to get healthier first and foremost on the offensive line. I didn't think they would take him this early, but I think that's a good thing, because the fact that they did take him in the third round, despite Carroll saying we want to get healthy, suggests they really like him. So I'm not going to sort of see this as a negative thing. I do wonder, I mean, his ankle injury, I think it was pretty serious still when he did a lot of the testing. I don't think he was 100% healthy. I mean, his broad jump was one of the worst. And when you watch him play on tape, his footwork is fantastic. He always has the defender in front of him. He doesn't lose position in that regard. You want to see a bit more of a nastier edge at times from him, I think it's fair to say, but his footwork is great. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think if he's 100% healthy, he does a broad jump, which is a lot better than the sort of the 7 feet 10 or whatever it was that he jumped. Not a very good attempt. So I think that he was probably hurt, and that's part of the problem. But I watched a couple of minutes of a mic'd up session with Tom Cable, which anyone can see on Seahawks.com right now. I would recommend going and seeing this, because Tom Cable does a drill where he does like a triple block session. So he wants three linemen essentially blocking two guys, drive them off the ball, create that gap and let the running back explode. And as they're sort of doing this drill, Reese Odhiambo is one of the guys doing it. You can hear Tom Cable barking in the background, O can do this, O can triple block. And then as soon as O is Odhiambo, and when he sort of finished this little drill, he came across and Tom Cable points at him and goes, that was great, or something like that, and made a point of singling him out. This is a guy that Tom Cable just seems to be madly in love with as a player. And when you sort of consider his background, left tackle convert, that is what they've consistently started at left guard. You look at his size, his mobility, his potential to work out as a zone block scheme, guard or tackle. I would not be surprised at all. I know that a lot of people presume right now that Mark Glowinski is going to win the left guard job just because he's maybe got a year's experience. I will not be surprised the way that Cable's sort of acting around this guy and the way the Seahawks have talked about him and the fact they took him in the third round. This to me makes me think that he's got a really good chance to win that left guard job.
Well, the way the competition is shaping up, it's really interesting, right? Because I think we did kind of pencil in Glowinski either for the right guard or the left guard position. And when Ifedi was picked and they said that they weren't going to put him at tackle, they were going to start him at right guard, that made you think, okay, well, Glowinski will get that left guard job. But like you're saying, Odhiambo, you can't rule out the fact that there might be competition there. And then where does that leave Justin Britt? Oh, they're going to try him out at center. That's going to leave a very big offensive line if you end up seeing Justin Britt at center, right?
Yeah, I mean, size would be fantastic. And, you know, Justin Britt's an interesting one because the kind of assumption is with Seahawks fans that he's been a disaster and that he's a bust. But I will say this, that he was graded during the 2015 season as one of the best run-blocking offensive linemen at kind of at the midway point. And I think that a lot of the people who grade these things, it may even have been a PFF grade, were saying that he was the most improved offensive lineman as the season was going along. But then he has a pretty – I mean, it was a miserable performance against – Carolina in the playoffs. I mean, if anyone's seen the all 22 tape, I think someone maybe on Field Goals broke this down, mm-hmm. but you can sort of see he was atrocious that day. And that sort of sticks with you going into the offseason. And he has the size. He's an explosive tackle. He does drive people off the ball in the run game, but his pass protection is awful, or has been so far. Now at center, the responsibility is completely different than guard. And if he's just sort of blocking 1-1, squaring up, you know, if he's just trying not to get blown off the ball, then that might actually suit him. Now, I'm not convinced he's going to win that job. He's a very big player to play center. He's not done a great deal of snapping, although I think he has some center experience at Missouri. I wouldn't put him as the favorite to win that job by any stretch, but he has a shot. I mean, this is that's the most wide open competition on the team going into camp. It's center. It's Justin Britt. It's Joey Hunt. It's Patrick Lewis. It's Christian Tsakole, Will Parachak. You know, there's a lot of options there for the Seahawks to kind of pick a guy. And any of those guys, I would not be surprised at all if any of them ended up getting the job.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Joey Hunt, because here's a guy where Justin Britt, we've talked about how he can't pass block. Joey Hunt, this is a guy that can actually pass block. Now, he's undersized. He was picked in the sixth round and singled out by Pete Carroll, John Schneider, as a guy that they couldn't come away from the draft without. Were you surprised to hear that?
A little bit, but then I kind of like thought about it a bit more, and I just wondered whether or not it was more a case of we have to add a center in this draft. And maybe he was the last center that they had a draftable grade on. Mm-hmm. So they kind of felt like, if we don't take him, we're going to come out of this class without one. Mm-hmm. So I think with hindsight, because he was a sixth round pick, that's probably what they were meaning with that. Having seen Joey Hunt, I mean, there's a lot to like about his game. His second level blocking is superb. The Seahawks have used quite a lot of stretch plays, especially with Thomas Rawls. I mean, Rawls is a much better athlete, in fairness, than Marshawn Lynch. You know, you wouldn't run stretch with Marshawn Lynch that often because he's not got that sort of quick agility, quick twitch to sort of max out that. You want him sort of north and south. Mm-hmm. With Thomas Rawls, if you run a stretch, he can really exploit that. He can turn what would be potentially a 5-yard gain into a 20-yard gain. And the best sort of way to execute this, or the traditional, if you sort of read into it, the most traditional sense to make this player success in the zone blocking scheme is to have real athleticism at center and left tackle. You know, a left tackle and a center that gets to the second level and more size on the right hand side. And it's perhaps not a coincidence that the Seahawks are looking to field Jermaine Ifedi and Jamarcus Webb at right guard and right tackle, and that they're maybe looking at more athletes to play left tackle and center. And when you look at Joey Hunt getting to the second level, you think, yeah, you know, this could be something the Seahawks really zone in on, you know, the stretch run play going into 2016. And Hunt does that very well. The one concern is he's got very short arms. I mean, I think the sub 31-inch arms, this is the first player the Seahawks have drafted under Carolyn Schneider, offensive lineman that is, with less than 33-inch arms. So he's a real anomaly based on what they've done in the past. And he's short as well. And when you actually watch him playing against length, he can be sort of pushed off balance. There was a couple of times in a couple of the games I saw where you're looking and he's almost on the deck because you get length into his frame, you can shove him back, he gets off balance, and he never really recovers because he can't, because he's not got the length and the response for that. But when he squares up, when he faces man-to-man in front of him, when he gets to the second level, he looks very accomplished. The one problem is that in the NFL, it's going to be a little bit dirtier and a bit nastier. He's not going to face guys 1v1. They're going to get around the outside. He's going to have to recover. His footwork's going to have to be great. He's going to have a great punch. He's going to have to compensate for his lack of length. These are all things that are working against him, which is why I don't think he's going to win the job necessarily as a rookie unless he comes in and absolutely nails everything very quickly. I think he might be a guy who's competing more next year. If I was going to sort of put money on anybody to start that position, I think Patrick Lewis will probably just carry on and they will sort of reassess this position in a year's time.
Well, the last pick, Rob, that we haven't talked about, Kenny Lawler, wide receiver out of Cal, catching passes from the number one pick. Lawler goes all the way in the seventh round. Did you expect him to be an undrafted guy, or did he fall a little bit farther than you would have expected him?
I thought he was going to go into like the fourth or fifth round range. When you watch him play, he was terrific for Cal. I mean, like Jared Goff should send this guy a birthday card, even now they're playing for different teams. Because, you know, Goff's a good quarterback. You know, whether or not he's worth what the Rams gave up for him or not will be seen. But, you know, he bailed Jared Goff out a lot with some really great contested catches. And if there's one thing the Seahawks love, it's high points of the football, winning contested grabs, winning the red line, and body control as a receiver. And he's not the quickest guy. He's not the most athletic. He's not the biggest. But he catches the ball. And his character, and he's gritty, and he's consistent, and he makes big plays. The Seahawks have, with Ricardo Lockett retiring and with Chris Matthews moving on, they haven't really got a taller receiver who can make big chunk plays downfield. Mm-hmm. They have usually carried somebody who has no impact for 4 weeks or something like that, you know, like 4 or 5 weeks, doesn't have a catch. But then there'll come a game when all of a sudden this random guy gets a 50-yard touchdown grab. And that used to be Ricardo Lockett. I mean, if you think to the Denver game, mm-hmm. In 2014, he had a fantastic downfield reception against the Broncos, which came from nowhere. Last year against Carolina, he was the recipient of the flea flicker,
right,
from Russell Wilson. You know, they need somebody who can do that. And I think that Kenny Lawler is a guy who potentially could do that because of the way that he plucks the ball out the air, the way he competes for the ball in the air. So I think he's got a decent chance to make the roster and then have an impact pretty quickly. But if he's going to do that, he's competing with the likes of Kevin Smith, Kayson Williams, people like that. So he's going to have to maybe win the job with great special teams play as well. And I think if he's going to do that, he has to get bigger. He's looking very, very skinny at the moment. So he needs to get bigger, stronger, and prove that he can do stuff on special teams as well to warrant, I think, beating out other guys on the roster.
Well, that was the other interesting thing about Lawler, right, is that when the Seahawks take wide receivers, it's either in the second or the third round when you have guys with clear talent, or they wait and get them as undrafted free agents. Mm. And this time they actually draft a guy toward the end of the draft as a wide receiver. And it just makes me wonder, why would Lawler go in the seventh? Is it because people don't see him as being able to replicate what he did in college against NFL talent? Or it's just curious to me why he slipped as far as he did.
I think two things here. First, I think the Seahawks are pretty smart in the seventh round, because I think that they knew who they wanted to get in undrafted free agency, and they took the guys in round seven they thought they probably couldn't get. Mm. Zach Brooks is probably not going to sign for this team as a free agent after they've drafted Alex Collins and CJ Procise. He'd probably go somewhere else. So they drafted him to make sure they got him. And with Kenny Lawler, it would have been pretty easy for the Rams to sort of say, okay, he's got that relationship with Jared Goff. Do you want to come and sign with us? And he probably would have done that. I mean, he's from California. He would have been a very obvious free agent signing for the Los Angeles Rams. Mm-hmm. So the Seahawks drafted these two guys, I think, because they knew that they'd struggle to get them in undrafted free agency. And then they targeted the linebackers, defensive linemen, stuff like that, who, you know, because they hadn't taken a linebacker, for example, in the draft. So they could then appeal to people like Montez Overton and Christian French and say, look, we haven't drafted anybody. Come and compete for this role. We've lost Bruce Irvin. We haven't replaced him. Here's your passage to become an NFL starter. And they didn't draft a safety either. So they could say the same to someone like Tyvus Powell. So that's the first thing on that. I think the other reason why Lawler fell is because he doesn't have anything apart from the hands. There's nothing that really stands out. So he's incredibly skinny. Can he get off press coverage? Teams will be worried about that. He doesn't have great speed, and you know, I guess they could say he's played with the number one pick at quarterback. So does that enhance his performance because he's playing with a great quarterback? I like to think of it the other way around, really. I think that he did a lot for Jared Goff. Yeah. But he has to get bigger. He's lost so much weight since the combine. I mean, he looks like the skinny 14-year-old who's going to the gym for the first time right now. I mean, his arms are incredibly thin. He needs to sort of get some bulk on that frame because he's just not going to be able to beat press otherwise.
Well, you mentioned some of the names of the undrafted free agents, Rob. Are there any guys that really jump out at you as potential guys that come time for the 53-man roster, guys that will recognize their name as undrafted free agents?
A couple, really. I mean, Tyvus Powell is pretty much identical to Deion Buchanan as an athlete. Same size, same kind of speed. I thought he was going to go in sort of the fourth or fifth rounds. Was very surprised that he was there in free agency. And what I'm not anticipating is going to be Deion Buchanan for a team that has done so well finding not just role players but starters in the free agent market, would not be a total surprise at all that if in a couple of years' time, Tyvus Powell is a pretty key player for the Seahawks. So that's one. The other one is Brandon Bryant. I mean, if you get a chance to sort of see his tape, there's some nice All-22 tape on him, which is on YouTube that you can find. His tape is sensational. I mean, he is a fantastic pass rusher, and he's not just doing it against, you know, smaller school teams. He did it against teams like Florida as well. So, you know, you watch him play and you think, this is it. They want to play this guy at fullback as well. You know, really exciting player to watch. And because there's an obvious passage for him, you know, to become in and be the Will Tukuafu for this team. You know, I really, really hope that he can pick up the whole fullback thing, because if they could find a fullback with his potential to play on the defensive line and wreak havoc as well, I mean, that would just be a tremendous get for the Seahawks.
Well, Rob, the other big news this week was with kind of that announcement that we could see. Dang it. Now I'm spacing on his name. The announcement that we could see Brandon Browner as the at safety. Now, you have Earl Thomas at safety. You have Cam Chancellor at safety. And then Pete Carroll's talking about Brandon Browner playing base downs at safety. And how are we going to see all of these safeties on the field all at once?
Well, I think the interesting thing with this is that, and this is the, you know, maybe where sometimes people who are watching the Seahawks from the outside, you know, some of the national guys, they sort of wonder, why didn't they replace Bruce Irvin in this offseason? And the reason is that the sort of the Bruce Irvin role, or the starting role on defense that Bruce Irvin and Mike Morgan have had, and Kevin Pierre-Lewis at times as well, is pretty much a one or two down role. I mean, they only kind of line up three linebackers on the field in base defense, and teams are increasingly not running base defense that much. I mean, really, it's kind of like first, second down, third, you get your base off, you put your nickel on. Mm-hmm. Some teams are playing nickel in second and second down as well. So if you are taking a linebacker off the field in nickel, you are either putting on an extra pass rusher, which for the Seahawks could be Frank Clark, it could be Cassius Marsh, it could be Chris Clemons. In fact, it will be Chris Clemons probably, who they're bringing on. Or you can bring on a safety, and that could be Brandon Brown, or it could be Tyvus Powell. I mean, this is the great thing about, you know, the decision here is that it's horses for courses. So if you are if you're sort of in a third and long, or if you're sort of concerned about a guy in the slot, if you're playing a great tight end. I mean, the Seahawks are going to face Gronkowski again this year if he's healthy when they face the Patriots. There's going to be one or two others they face as well. Greg Olsen, they'll face him again. You know, if they want to intimidate these tight ends, they want to push them around, they want to match someone up who's got the size who can handle them, then you can put Brandon Browner in there and you can take the linebacker off the field, put Browner on the field. And there'll be other occasions when they put Chris Clemens on the field or Frank Clark or whoever. So, you know, I like the way the Seahawks are doing this. They're kind of treating that linebacker position as a real versatile, flexible one. You know, okay, in base, we put Mike Morgan on the field. In nickel, we're taking him off, we're putting pass rusher or safety or another cornerback on there. I mean, a lot of teams are doing this now. There's only really two linebackers who are going to start every down for the Seahawks, and that's KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner. And sort of if we embrace that and imagine that there's going to be other role players who are going to have a big impact for the Seahawks, it's not going to be a Bruce Irvin type, that position is adapting now, then it kind of, you kind of create the scenario where Brown is going to be effective.
I like it because one reason as fans, I feel like, you know, sometimes we bang our heads against the wall, like when tight ends just beat us all the time and we think, how do the Seahawks not see this? We're getting beat by tight ends all the time. And I feel like this actually addresses the issue and it makes me feel like I'm not crazy.
Big time. I mean, it's a great point. I mean, like if you look at the way, I mean, this is kind of like a sneaky little key thing for the Seahawks here because we've all forgotten the trouble the Seahawks had during the season, or like I think a lot of people have, against tight ends. I mean, for the first like 8 to 10 weeks of the season, was like any tight end was beating the Seahawks.
The
like,
reason why we lost the Carolina game, the reason why we lost the Rams game, it's tight end touchdowns.
I mean, you could run through them all. I mean, like Cincinnati, I mean, there were so many games where whoever happened to be the tight end for the other team was going to have a big day. I mean, you knew what to do in fantasy football anyway. It was like, which tight end's playing the Seahawks? Right. Get him in your lineup. This is a perhaps a way to combat that. It might not work, but you know, putting Brandon Browner, who is a cornerback, so he's probably going to. I mean, he's an older cornerback now, but he's probably going to have a similar speed to a Greg Olsen or you know a Gronkowski. I mean, in terms of a foot race, he can win. And the other thing is that he's a tone setter. I mean, he will hit you and he will hit you hard, and you don't want to get back up and have another snap against this guy. So if he can be intimidating, if he can be physical, if he can push these guys around, if he can jam them, I mean, he's probably better to jam these guys than a lot of other cornerbacks are. So and linebackers. So I'm very interested to see that little matchup. And I know a lot of people are saying Brandon Brown is going to have to fight for a roster spot. And while that is true, I just think there's a role for him. I think there's a role to protect him and keep him on this team. I think he's going to have to really be beaten out by somebody to not see him on. And I think the other thing is just having him back in the locker room. I mean, the Seahawks want to be the bully again. You know, and they brought Brandon Browner and Chris Clemens back for a reason. And that's because these guys are leaders emotionally, physically. You know, I think Ricardo Lockett was asked, you know, why, do you have any regrets about the injury earlier in his press conference? He said, no, because I'm a dog. You know, you know, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Well, Chris Clemens and Brandon Brown are a couple of dogs here, you know, a couple of big dogs as well. So, you know, they're coming back and it just feels like there's a real toughness about the Seahawks again. So I think that Brandon Browner's role is going to be a crucial one.
Rob, great job as always coming on the show, breaking down the draft. I'm glad we were able to do it. People can follow you on Twitter at Rob Staton, STATON. They can follow you on SeahawksDraftBlog.com and also through the 3000 NFL Mock Draft podcast. Now that the draft season is kind of over, what can we expect from you in the coming months leading up to the Seahawks season?
Well, I like to take a break initially. I mean, I have a young son who is 2 years old, 2.5 now. So it's a nice time for me to spend some real quality time with him for the next few weeks. But then eventually, I mean, I'm ready for football right now. I mean, I'm kind of wishing my life away already for it to be September or even August. I'll take a preseason game at this point. Yeah. You know, I'm really looking forward to it. Eventually, down the line, I guess, in sort of when we get to the summer, we're going to start. I'm already just kind of looking at guys. You know, if they want a name from somebody to sort of go and have a look at, Jehu Chesson, who is a wide receiver from Michigan, is 6'3" and 210 pounds, and he's the kick returner for Michigan. He had a 96 yard touchdown return against Northwestern last year, and he does end arounds and stuff like that. I mean, this is kind of like having AJ Green doing all those things. So he's an incredible athlete. for his size, and he's got a great attitude, great personality, and he's going to be well coached by Jim Harbaugh at Michigan. So if you have withdrawal symptoms, kind of like me, and you need somebody to kind of go and watch, there's a load of highlights from last season on this guy on YouTube. If you need somebody to go and watch, then go and check him out. Maybe that'll occupy you for a couple of nights.
See, already looking ahead to the 2017 draft. Like it, Rob. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. And yeah, definitely check that out. SeahawksDraftBlog.com, 3000 NFL Mock Draft podcast. And yeah, at Rob Staten on Twitter.